Welcome back to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Are you a freak? By that I mean, do you have a different way of looking at the world? Do you want to do things your way? Are you not a fan of settling or compromising? Yeah? And are you looking for a way to make your weirdness an asset? Then I've got a great book recommendation for you. It's the new one by Chris Brogan, entitled The Freaks Shall Inherit the Earth, Entrepreneurship for Weirdos, Misfits, and World Dominators. I ordered this book the day that it came out, I read it, and I got a lot out of it. So I asked Chris to come be a guest on The Lead, and he graciously agreed. And in this episode of The Lead, I will play for you my interview with Chris, in which we talk about a number of subjects, including why some freaks are successful and others struggle, the difference between fitting in and belonging, and much, much more. It's really an action-packed 15 minutes. Oh, and that one time he and Brian Clark went rogue during a panel discussion. Are you someone who really wants to blend in and be part of the background, or do you secretly have a wild side and are awaiting the battle cry? This is the question posed in the intro of the new book, The Freak Shall Inherit the Earth, written by longtime friend of Copyblogger, Chris Brogan, who joins me on this episode of The Lead. Chris, welcome to the show. How's the book release going?
You know, it's fun. I'm enjoying it. I just found out as the day that we're recording this that we signed global rights for China, so that's kind of fun.
Wow, congratulations.
Thanks.
Now, have you had books translated in China before?
I have. I'm very lucky that people were kind enough to buy trust agents in China and Korea and a few other countries that were kind of fun and interesting. And then strangely, Social Media 101 and Google Plus for Business, my very specifically about social media books, you know, were translated everywhere. So my books that are about business usually don't get as much of a opportunity.
Well, very cool. Well, congratulations on that. And before we jump into some of the themes of the book, where's the best place for people to get their hands on a copy?
Just go to callingallfreaks.com. That's probably the easiest way to do it.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about a few themes. And it seems like the first thing we should do is define this book's audience. So who are the freaks that you're speaking to in this book?
These are people who want to take some kind of ownership of their life. They're the people that have almost like tattoo level passion about something in their business or whatever, that they're just into this thing. Sometimes they're the employeepreneur, that they're the CEO of their own cubicle. Other times they run their own company. And it's just the kind of people that really want to do the kind of work they want to do with the people that they want to do it and in the way that they want to do it. That's who I think a freak is.
And I really enjoyed the book, so I definitely urge people to go read it. Really liked it. My favorite chapter was number 2, which is The Wild Colors and the Solid Spine, which is a great chapter title, by the way. And this is the chapter where you explain why some freaks are successful and why some others are not. What keeps a lot of freaks from achieving their goals?
You know, I have to tell you, so first off, it's funny because I had to change the subtitle of that chapter because I had said something about like what makes some freaks successful and other freaks live in their mom's basement or beggars or something like that. And my girlfriend Jacqueline said, you know, that's not really polite. So you
change it to strugglers?
Strugglers, you know, because, you know, maybe you're a late bloomer or something. It's funny. The first off is that a lot of times people are kind of cuckoo, but don't realize that it has to have some kind of end value. And that's one of the first mistakes that, you know, some freaks are having trouble with is that, you know, there's a difference between someone who's a freak about, I don't know, collecting pens. Like there could possibly be a business somewhere in there. If you're the kind of person who really loves pens and wants to help other people find the right pen for the job or something, It's a little less likely if you collect toenails. So, you know, you've kind of got to find that. So there's sort of a, do you know something or are you into something that someone else might possibly be into? And if so, is it the kind of thing where they might somewhere along the way pay you for it? Mm-hmm. And then, along the way, there's all these missing ingredients that cause us not to do what we're doing, you know, discipline, you know, we worry about fear. There's all kinds of challenges with people saying that they don't know what to do so that they don't know where to go next. So yeah, there's a lot of things that get in the way. And so I just tried to knock as many of those down as I could.
Well, and you mentioned discipline, and I'm glad you mentioned that because that was the section of this chapter that I liked the most, probably just because it's something I've been working on myself. So I wanted to tell you one of your tips. You have that 6-step kind of framework for building discipline. It's start and keep a streak going. And so I'm proud to say I've mostly succeeded doing that. I've been posting something I'm grateful for every day since I read that section with the hashtag freak streak on Google+, and I'm up to 25 now.
Wow.
Yeah. So thank you for inspiring that. I think it really does help. Can you explain that real quickly, like why that's important, just to kind of start a streak and commit to it, and how that can help you kind of get that framework for discipline?
Yeah, well, I mean, discipline is sort of like if there was sort of a small little piece of formula for it, it would sort of be something like experience plus training plus time or something like that. So it's one of these deals where as you learn some stuff and you train yourself to learn how to do it a little bit better, and then over time, well, the plus time part of it, you know, keeping a streak going. A lot of times somebody will say to me, you know, I'm really crappy at public speaking. And I'll be like, well, how often have you been on a stage? And they'll be like, twice. Both times were horrible. I was like, well, I don't know. How many other things in your life have you done only twice that you were really damn good at? You know, everything that we do in life that we're pretty good at, we've kind of done a bunch of times, whether or not that's, you know, practice of some kind in between. I mean, Yo-Yo Ma quite famously was, you know, somebody said, you still practice like 4 hours a day? Why do you practice 4 hours a day? You're Yo-Yo Ma. And he says, I'm Yo-Yo Ma because I practice 4 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's the deal. You know, keep something going. And if it's worth doing, it's worth doing daily.
And part of the problem I think people have with doing that is finding the time to do it, right? And so another quote you have from the book that I loved is, let me be clear, you will not inherit the earth, nor will you be successful at most anything if you can't figure out and master time. And you go on to provide some really great essential time mastery hacks. Which ones help you the most in your daily life?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first off, there's a couple things. So I'll tell you, one of the first things I always tell people that always blows their mind is I only schedule my days 40% full. And people are always mind blown by this. They're like, what? I mean, we're all so busy. And I always say, you know, but you don't run your car at 100% all the time. You don't run your computer at 100%. There's no other system that you run in your life at 100%. So why would you run your day at 100%? That means like one sick kid ruins everything. Like it crashes down. You forget your passport, so you've got to go back to your house before you go to the airport. I mean, if you don't have the time to do these kinds of things, this is why you make much more mistakes. So another thing that people do is they waste their time. It's really funny. We treat money as if it's super precious and we hoard it when we shouldn't. And we treat time as if it's absolutely something we've got endless supplies of, and we waste it when we don't have that kind of time. So to me, you know, I have a huge list of things I don't do. I have a huge list of things. I mean, even this podcast, you said, hey, I want to interview you for the thing. I said, great, if you do it briefly. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the first thing I said is like, you know, I'm protecting my time here. So I think those things are important. I think always having some kind of a plan. Anytime you go into anything without a plan, it stinks. And it's not to say that you need to be sort of like anal hyphen retentive the whole of your life. But I mean, even going to the beach, if you have a small little checklist, it's going to save you from the, oh yeah, I forgot sunscreen moment. So I think that there's just a lot of opportunities to do a lot more with time.
It's a good thing you said that too, because I had about 2 hours worth of questions I could have asked. So.
Well, sure. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts which feel like they seem to have all the time in the world. And I feel like, you know, we don't even have all the time to listen in the world. How do we have all the time to do these interviews? So.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. So shifting gears real quick. Early in the book, you talk about the difference between fitting in and belonging, which I thought was really interesting. And it's an important distinction within this context of freak. So what's the difference between fitting in and belonging?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the whole thing about fitting in versus belonging is all about this whole sense of shaving off your unique edges and hiding what makes you who you are. That's what fitting in means. Fitting in means, you know, stop doing those things that make you kind of a weirdo. Belonging is when you find the weirdos that totally get what you're into. You know, if I, you know, head out to a group of people and I say something about burpees, everyone loves them. You know, CrossFitters and Spartan race people and whatever all totally get that joke, you know, because burpees are evil.
Right.
And, you know, if I make a joke about, you know, roll your 1d20 save against stupidity, the Dungeons and Dragons kids know what I'm talking about. And, you know, we love that moment. We love that moment where we're kind of amongst people who know what we're doing. Like, somebody recently was having a trouble with their iPhone, and they just pulled the iPhone out of their pocket, turned it to one edge, and blew on it like they were trying to blow the dust out of the video game cartridge from like the old 1980s video games. And I was like, wow, he's like my people here, you know? And so it's in those moments when we find people that we belong, that's who we really want to do business with. So what I really have deeply in my heart is that there's just a whole other way to look at everything that we're not doing right now, which is very much that we're worrying too much about fitting in and we're not worrying enough about belonging with the people we want.
Another great quote of yours that I like because I think it's so practical is, you'll find that a lot of what I preach comes off as common sense, yet what's most magical about it is that so few people practice these skills, which really echoes some advice that Darren Rouse gave at Authority Intensive recently, when he essentially said he doesn't have any secrets to share, but it's more that just success was more about doing the things we already knew we should be doing, which sounds so simple, but why do so many folks seem to struggle with that?
First off, we're addicted to distraction. I mean, we love thinking maybe someone else knows a better way to do this and I should learn that because I'm probably not smart enough to do it. That's a huge one. Another is that we quite often have this feeling that we've got to go and that we're not good enough. I mean, that's one for sure. And another is just that we get lazy and we're complacent. We think, this is good enough for right now. And we love good enough. I mean, the enemy of the great is the good is one of those old quotes that's totally and utterly true. But what I find is that, the things that I do daily and the things that I do work on that are the least sexy things that I do are what are yielding the most results. And that the more I do those things, the more I'm seeing a great result from them. And I don't know, I'm kind of getting into it. Like, the things that turn me on most, kind of my new personal porn are things that everyone else has, done and dismissed years ago. Like, I love email marketing more than any other tool. I love Evernote and adding tags to things in Evernote that I'm actually going to refer to as opposed to these people who just store stuff like chipmunks with big mouths.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned right there something interesting. You said one reason why people don't do what they already know they should be doing is they don't feel like they're good enough. And maybe that kind of goes along with this idea of freaks and not feeling like maybe you don't fit in, having to find that belonging. So how does someone who feels like that, who isn't quite sure but thinks differently, how do they take that first step to start doing those things? How do they start to believe that they are good enough?
One of them is to start thinking about, like, where do you feel most comfortable with people and where can you see yourself letting go of some of your fear? I mean, that's a huge thing to think about is where do you feel like when you talk to the people, you can actually exhale as well as talk, and that's maybe a good starting point. And then from there, what can you do to be part of that community in a way that you could actually serve them? I actually got that advice from Brian Clark. He and I were on the stage. Yeah. We were in this horrible panel. I shouldn't be mean to people, but the person interviewing us was not especially good. She didn't know us very well. She didn't have any real questions of any great value. So we just decided to turn the answers, everything she said, we just turned the answers into what we felt like talking to each other about. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Brian said was, he said, he's pointing to me. He's like, I see you like kind of running all over the place, chasing down every fly ball that's out in front of you. And at that time in my life, the opportunities were coming at me faster than I could handle. Mm-hmm. And he said, how I parse these is I just think which one of these is the best for my community, which one of these will give me the best opportunity to help the people that have given me their attention. And I thought, wow, that's a great sorting hat. And then I proceeded to not do that for like 5 years because that's every bit of advice Brian gives me. It takes 5 years to actually execute.
Yeah.
But I always do it. And then if you're afraid and if you're not sure where you fit in, the other thing too is if you're starving, it's not the right time to start thinking about what garden to plant. You have to eat first. And so I always say to people that, seeds are for planting and sometimes for eating. And if you're in the starving mode, that's not when to make these decisions. At that point, just eat. Like, go get a job. Go do something. Go get some cash. Then figure out where you want to be when you grow up. And that's kind of where it gets trickier. I tell people all the time that, take small bites. Try not to let your failures mess up other people, but just get into failure. And the more you can get into failure, the more you can learn from it and start to reset and build better stuff.
Yeah. Wow. It's great advice, Chris. My final question for you, this time has gone so fast.
Wow, Jerry.
So the final section of the book is called Take Action, Fight Crime, Save the World, complete with exclamation points, which I love. And that first phrase is really the crux of the section, take action. What action do you want people to take after they finish your book?
I laid it right out. Like, what I decided was, so this is a frustration Julian Smith and I have had since the first book. We wrote Trust Agents together and we wrote also Impact Equation together and we've both written books since. And we're just so mad that people just like, here's what happens. You can see because of Twitter. You see somebody, they'll say, just finished Trust Agents, now reading Crush It. Just finished Crush It, now on to this, right? Like they read books as if it's bingo and they're not saying now taking an action based on the book. So for years, I mean, all the books that Julian and I have ever written in any form or fashion, except for my book of poetry, all has instruction in it. And so in this case, I went even crazier and just said, I'm going to make a chapter like do this damn stuff. And it kind of recounts what's in the rest of the book. But I want people to, you know, to declare that they're a freak. I want people to, you know, define what makes them successful. I want people to figure out some skills that are going to help them get there and figure out the framework that goes in it. And then there's just all the other steps of what it takes to do the book. And I think that really the next to last thing in there is I tell people, be ready for the bad times, because that's the other thing that screws up everybody's attempt to be a freak, is they somehow forget that maybe there's going to be a bad moment, and they somehow cash it all in when that bad moment hits.
Yeah. Excellent advice, Chris. I really, really did enjoy the book. Thank you for writing it, and I encourage everybody to get it. And thanks for your time and sharing some of your thoughts with us here on The Lead.
My utter pleasure, Jared. Thank you.
All right. I will talk to you soon, Chris. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Lead, and my thanks again to Chris Brogan for taking the time to join me. Once again, if you are enjoying these episodes, if you're getting a lot out of them, we sure would appreciate a rating or a review on iTunes. Tweet about us, email the show to a friend. We would appreciate any way that you can help us spread the word. And don't forget, if you like Stitcher, you can now subscribe to The Lead on Stitcher. Just go to copyblogger.com/Stitcher and you can add us to your playlist. All right, we'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, talk to you soon, everybody.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. Lord, have mercy on my rough and rough.